And now, courtesy of the 11L Network, it's LF Midwood.
LF Midwood.
And the Midwood Files. With the LF Midwood Experience. Here on Radio New York International.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let me get over there. It's early because I've been forgetting to say it. So apparently, my name is LF Midwood, and you're listening to the Midwood Files. I'm kind of like blown away, literally, by Florida. I don't, they're saying it might be like the worst one like ever. So I know, you know, we become kind of desensitized to these storms as they hit places not that we're not in for sure. I know we've gotten some, you know, pretty scary storms in the Northeast, but we never on a regular get anything like they get down in Florida. And Ian apparently is going to be worse than you know. And it's always it's the storm itself, of course, and then it's the storm surge, which is the flooding. You know, the flooding that occurs as a result of all that excess water being dumped into shorelines. You know. So, I mean, I'm, you know, my heart, you know, I don't know what to say. It's the reason I didn't open with any music tonight. I didn't know what to, it's kind of, whoa. So I figured, I can't really hear myself too well. I figured, there it is. I just let it be. Just, you know, kind of not say anything. Perhaps a little bit of silence even. We have no idea of fatalities yet. I think last I heard it was in the 50s, and they've got a long, long way to go before they'll be able to account for everyone. And I guess that's that. I mean, I don't know. You know, I know the Democrats have already trying to politicize this, or at least one liberal press dude. Who got smacked around by DeSantis after the fact. You look around and it's not too hard these days because basically those people are fucking crazy and crazy people are all over the place. They're talking about global warming is why these storms are as intense and fierce and ginormous as they are. And they're taking from like 100-year history, you know, the 100-year that they've actually been 100 years that they've actually been tracking these things to whatever degree that they can track them. You know, that's I often say I should have gotten into that meteorologist business because, you know, you're either wrong or you're right. You say some shit and either you're wrong or you're right. And you got a 50-50 chance every day. I kind of like those odds. You know, that's me. 50-50? Yeah. Maybe. But I am indeed very, very sorry. I don't know if I actually do. I know anybody who lives in Florida. Yes, I know my Uncle Tim is up from Florida. I don't believe he lives in the affected areas. And it's obviously we're going to get a lot of rain up and down the East Coast. I was scheduled to go to a car show tomorrow with my Uncle Tim over in Bristol, but that's been canceled because of the weather. And I think where they were holding it, it wasn't asphalt or concrete. I think it would have been like a dirt type situation, and that's going to turn to mud and stay muddy. So the only good news about that is I don't have to get up at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. You know, it's one of the few they say it all the time. All right, I'm on disability. I don't do much. There's no reason that I need to be out of bed before like noonish. You know, there's no reason. I can't think of a reason. Unfortunately, other people can, but I can't think of a reason. So I got up early on Friday and I went over to my Uncle George's, and they started to show the place. It's listed. It's being shown. We were sitting in the backyard on the patio. It's being shown. It's moving along. It's a process. I don't follow the real estate market, so I couldn't tell you other than listening to the news as to whether real estate's good, up or down or whatever's going on. But I know I know we are in a recession, and one of the earmarks of a recession that has not occurred yet is the layoffs, and the layoffs affect housing. So I think we just kind of have to stand around waiting for the layoffs, and then we can see what happens with housing. But it is, you know, it's an investment property. I mean, it's a three apartment house, so I mean, it's not like it's, you know, and it is in Bristol. That's always an up. You know, Bristol's a very nice community. Let's just put it that way. It's a very nice community. It's gotten a little younger than I like, believe it or not. He says at 52. But you can tell, you know, a lot of the more conservative elements of the community have passed. I mean, they've gotten older and they've died, very much like my uncle. So, you know, it's the inmates aren't running the asylum yet, but they're banging on the doors, pew, 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 you know? So yeah, we went over there on Friday, this is how this happened, right? So I have to get up apparently at like 9:30 in the morning on Friday to be able to leave the house at 10 o'clock on Friday, right? So I get in the car, you know, it's like a quarter to ten even. I'm even running ahead of schedule, you know. So my aunt's in the car and I'm like, she starts the car, we start moving. And I'm like, I want to go to Seven Stars, and she goes, no, I want to go to Lawrence and Warren, which is like 75% of the way to the house, which is where we're going, right? So I say, okay, fine. So I said to her in the car while we're on the highway, it's like, you know what? There's no reason the reason we used to get up early to go to Bristol was because Uncle George got up early, because he was up at the crack of dawn, because that's what old people do. And then they go to sleep at 6 o'clock at night. So we went there, you know, we tried to get there at, you know, like noonish. Okay, fine, I get that. My Uncle George has passed. He is no longer alive. There is no reason to get up at 9:30 in the morning to go to Bristol when my Uncle George isn't involved in the scenario. There isn't. There's just not. You know, there's just not. So she kind of like, yeah, you're right. Because I asked her, so why are we doing this so early? And she's like, I don't know. So what do you mean you don't know? What the fuck is that, man? That's not acceptable. So that's the first strike, right? Second strike, we friggin', we get to, you know, because I ordered, what I did was, is I ordered my weed online, you know, and then I go pick it up, you know, so reserve. So, and I grabbed something I liked, you know, because I'm giving up the smoke for October. I'm not smoking any weed for October, the whole month of October. Well, I might break at Halloween, but that's already been 30 days because my doctors, and when I say doctors, I mean plural, plethoric, 1, 2, 3, at least 4 of them now. Say give up the weed for a little while and see how you feel. So I'm like, oh, I gotta give up the weed a little while. But I've been kind of not doing it. I've been like avoiding doing it. But what I've been doing is I've been smoking. And for like the last month, I've been like averaging, I don't know, a gram and a half, 2 grams, which is you know, if you roll a fatty out of a gram of weed, you know, you're doing good. Those are big joints, right? So what I did was I knew that I wasn't going to be smoking after last night. So I wanted to see the premiere of Hocus Pocus 2, of which we are big fans of the original from 29 years ago. Great cult film, by the way. And possibly the definition of a cult film. And so I said, you know what, we're going to get some like just some junk, junk to eat. And I'm gonna get some weed. This is gonna be the, like the last blowout that I'm gonna get to do, you know. So I went and I bought a 3-pack of 1 gram, what they describe as blunts, because it's not regular paper. It's more of a cigar-like paper, really, actually. They had a 3-pack of these little blunts, 1 gram each, with wedding cake. And wedding cake's like 33%, I think. Yeah, I think wedding cake's in the 30s as far as THC content. I probably could have eaten one of them and gotten high in 20 minutes. That's how it went. So it's like, okay. So I put the order in, right? And my aunt drives right past the dispensary. I mean, the exit where the dispensary is, because we can get off there, Route 6, we go a couple exits down, and then we get closer to where we're going on the East Bay. Usually we get off at Route 6 because we want to do stuff, and then from Route 6 we get back 136 south, for those of you interested. So she drove right by the exit, and I was like, I don't understand. Why did you drive by the exit? And she goes, you forgot to tell me. And I'm like, big-ass billboard. This is a big-ass billboard, right? At least 50 feet from the exit. You know what I'm saying? You know, plenty of time to make that decision. You know? So here I am over in Bristol, up early in the morning. Not really. I shook my breakfast. Not really hungry, right? Friggin' there I am. So we get to Bristol, right? And she knocks and she does. And the tenant, the middle floor tenant comes down. Maria comes down. And they go up to Maria's apartment while I'm sitting in the patio. I knew my EMT friend was off, so I didn't expect to see him. So there I am sitting there, not stoned, on the last day that I'm, you know, scheduled to be stoned for a while. Not stoned. Nope. No weed. Nada. Nada. So I'm like, I said to Jerry before she goes upstairs, it's like, I'm not required to do a lot, right? Right. And she goes, I don't know yet. So I'm like, oh, so this is like strike two and a half, you know? And then what winds up happening is she comes downstairs and says, we're not moving anything today. And I'm like, why the fuck am I here? I don't understand. I don't understand why you got me out of bed early. I don't understand why you drove past the dispensary. And I don't understand why I'm sitting here doing nothing. I don't understand that. I could have done that at home. I don't need you to do that. Believe me. So we hung out for a while. It looks like Maria may try and buy the house, actually. Yeah, because she's a woman of independent, whatever. I wouldn't quite call it wealth, I suppose. Independent means, I guess that's what they call that. Yeah, she's very comfortable in that apartment on the second floor. So, and she could rent the bottom one out, and she's already got the top one rented out. So they're going to try, and my aunt's going to go with her. Her English isn't super spiffy. She's calling me in, so she's going to go down with my aunt early next week to her bank, meaning to Maria's bank, and they're going to see if they can pull it off, which would be great. It would be nice to see it go to someone who's nice and you know, who knew my uncle and, you know, appreciated my uncle, which is, you know, more than I can say for my shit stain second cousin. So there's that. So we wound up picking up weed on the way back. And I was going to smoke a little before I got home, but you know what? It was just, I didn't want to smoke. I don't smoke in the car too much. I can smoke in the car a little bit, so I don't push my luck. But I didn't feel like standing out in the wind because it was a little wind smoking. So I said, you know what? I'll smoke when I get home. No big deal. You know, it's, I might as well. I was going to eat anyway. So what's the point of smoking like a fatty in a parking lot, going in, getting, eating, and then, you know, not being, and I'm still working on that experiment, but still, I'm going to assume that the weed makes me, or the food makes me less high. That's what I'm going to assume for whatever reason. You know, that being the case, why am I going to, it doesn't make sense. So we ate, we went to, I forget where we went to. Not Your Average Joe's. This is a place on Route 6. Very nouveau, very expensive. We opted for a pizza, so and they had Barg's root beer on tap. I'm going to try and cut the root. I'm going to try and cut the soda out again. That's no marijuana, no cannabis, no soda, and no Gatorade. Like sugary drinks to replace it with, if you know what I'm saying. So we'll see what October holds. October's usually a pretty good month for me. So, if it weren't for all the medical shit going on and doctors imploring me to find out what happens when I'm not smoking, I wouldn't. There's no way in the world I would have quit smoking, really stopped. I would have slowed down. And that's the thing. This is really interesting, right? I can't figure this out because I started smoking about a month ago, and I haven't been sick. Usually what would happen when I would get sick for days and days and days is I would be smoking weed, I would stop, and I would get sick for days and days and days, as most of you know. I know I've told this story ad nauseum. That's funny. See what I did there? Anyway, but what's been happening the last, maybe 3 weeks or so, and I haven't been smoking every day, but on the days that I have been smoking, I've been smoking joints, I've been smoking paper, right? White flower rolled up in paper, which is a regular joint, pre-rolls, because I don't, I don't roll very well. I never did. So I've been smoking maybe 2 grams a day, and I haven't been getting sick, right? So last night I smoked all three of these 1 gram spliffy thingies, and I didn't get sick. I did not. I have not even feel even remotely sick. So I don't know if I actually have CHS. I think the doctors who have said that I don't, and there have been a few who said that they don't believe I have it. They believe there's something else. That whatever it is, it's something else. So it's a bit of a mystery at the moment. Even though I didn't like the CHS friggin' diagnosis, at least it was a diagnosis to work from. It was like, I'm actually drinking my last can of Orange Crush. Me likey. Now, I don't know what's going on, quite frankly. I think it would be good to be able to finally eliminate it and say, look, this isn't, but I'm going to be able to point back to the last month, whereas I smoked a month and I didn't really get sick. While, you're asking me not to smoke for a month to see if I don't get sick, I'm not quite sure what the logic is there. I guess if I remain ill, then I guess it was not the CHS. I feel like it's some sort of witch trial here. I feel either way I'm gonna lose. They're gonna take the cannabis away from me. I get the feeling they're gonna. But I smoked three. Yeah, I got home. I smoked one, and then I smoked one at the meal thing didn't go as we planned. We wound up eating some of the pizza that we had bought. I brought home 4 slices, and Gina ate most of them, and then I ate one later on. So I wasn't too hungry. My appetite has been reduced, so that's actually kind of good. That's it, though. I don't know what the story is. I'm a little confused. I smoked 3 grams last night, and I'm perfectly fine, And I think I mentioned this African doctor that I was talking to last time. I know I missed last week. Speaking of which, missing stuff. There's five. There's, I believe if I look at the calendar, that there's 1, 2, 3, 4. There are indeed. Let me make sure I got this right. This is the first 1, 8, 15, 20. Yeah, there's five of them. There's no matter how you slice it, there's five. So there's five Saturdays, there's five Sundays, and there's five Mondays this week or this October, and that only happens only 800 and something years apparently. So what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to try to make all five shows. I don't think I've made a whole month previously going back if you count to the summer, to the deeper into the summer, to July, August. That being said, I would like to do all five shows in October this year. So, and I think it would be a nice way of reestablishing myself in this slot, in this thing, in this time slot that John always he's always what's that he promos it. Yeah, he promos it during his show. So and like I'm not there, you know, stuff. Either I'm sick or I'm having equipment issues, and my equipment issues are usually internet related. So yeah, man, I just it's been a little hairy, like I said. But yeah, so I definitely want to do five shows this month. And so I got home, and that's what I'm saying. And I watched it, and I'm gonna have to watch Hocus Pocus 2 again, because I was so stoned I only remember a little bit. It used to be a lot better with that. Like, I used to be able to smoke and watch movies and remember stuff a lot. Seriously, because I've always been a big movie person. You know, the last decade or so I've gotten back into television, which has certainly eroded my brain. But I was always a big film guy. I liked film. And I like smoking a little weed and watching a good movie always made me happy. So I might just get back into that. I'm not sure. I should start reading again. Yeah, I feel it's over. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm at the bottom of the bag of candy, and I got a bellyache, and no more candy left, and it's like I'm not going to hear anything about this until next year. That's what I think. And we're still 30 days from Halloween. We're still 30 days. You know, I gave up the 1 month, and this is what I'm saying. You know, I should have waited. I gave up the one friggin' month. The one best friggin' month of the year. Best month of the year I gave up. Nope, no weed for me. Nope. So I might be a little irritable for a while. That actually doesn't happen to me. I just kind of wake up and keep going. But that's why I like to, like, when I'm smoking, I like to smoke and then go to sleep. Because I don't wind up being, I just wake up the next morning and it's like, okay, whatever. Now, there have been other stuff that I know I wanted to work on that I still want to get back some sort of video feed at some point in time. That's being worked on. That's a little bit more than camera issues. Or lighting. I finally got the lighting in the camera as good as it's going to get. It's the rest of the room and the green screen and all that I want to get into order. So it's still on my list. I haven't forgotten about it. It's not exactly doable at the moment. We're still kind of moving stuff around. And I feel okay. I mean, I feel, like I said, I kind of feel right. I certainly feel horrible about Florida, and certainly, you know, Mother Nature can be rather cruel at times. I think we know this by now. But other than that, I mean, I feel mostly okay. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. There's nothing seriously wrong at the moment. I don't feel any imminent saves being dropped on my head, but you never know. I do have, however, some news. So let me see if I can get a little news in and then pull the plug, because I don't really want to be around. So I was supposed to go to that show tomorrow, but it's raining. And it'll be all muddy, and it won't just be a mess. I did what I told her. I don't like. All right, I can get away with it. It's my thing. My show. My show. I can do anything I want. My show. All right. First, for good news. Noah out. Daily Show host leaving after 7 years, and losing 75% of his audience. This is off of Sean Hannity, but there, you can find similar articles in similar places. After 7 years, my time is up. Trevor Noah is leaving Comedy Central's Hallmark program after hosting the comedy news show for 7 years. Noah made the announcement on Thursday. It's been it's been absolutely amazing. It's something that I never expected, and I found myself thinking throughout the time everything we've gone through, and I realized after 7 years my time is up, Noah said. To gasps from his audience, gasps, they were upset. I've loved trying to figure out how to make people laugh, even when the stories are particularly on the worst days. Yeah, okay. Noah said, "We've laughed together, we've cried together." Noah took over for Jon Stewart in 2015 after he started as a contributor the year prior. This was out of Breitbart. I guess, it is out of Breitbart. I guess, I guess Hannity got it from Breitbart. Okay. Well, I don't. I had respect for Jon Stewart. I didn't necessarily agree with Jon Stewart, but I had respect for not Jon Stewart. This guy, after 7 years, and I haven't watched, so I can't even really say. For all I know, I would have developed a deep amount of respect for him. But from what I've read of the show over the last 7 years, it's probably not the case. I'd love for Jon Stewart to come back. Yeah, Jon Stewart, he makes sense a good part of the time. I wish, Jon Stewart is making as much sense these days as Bill Maher, who I hate. I think most people who listen to this program, though I hate the man, I can't stand him. But he's been making sense lately. He's been, he has on certain issues anyway, like the whole wokeness and things of that nature and the cancel culture. He's starting to make sense, things are pretty screwed up when Bill Maher is telling the Democrats, the liberals that, you might need to tone it down. It's bad. Let's see, what do I got here? Do I have anything else that's entertainment related? No, I do not. No, I do not. No, is that? Nope. That's not it. Nope. All right, so what do we got here? Is that a gateway pundit? President Trump praises Ginni Thomas for her courage and conviction after she tells J6 committee she still believes the election was stolen. So do I. So do I, Ginni. I think it's Ginni. It's G-I-N-N-I. Ginni Thomas testified in front of January 6th panel on Thursday. The panel wanted to talk to her about communications with Trump allies after the 2020 election. According to experts, she reiterated that she believed the 2020 election was stolen. Virginia Ginni Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, stood by her concerns about the 2020 election during an appearance before the January 6th committee Thursday, her lawyer said. Thomas reportedly fielded questions from the panel behind closed doors for about 3.5 hours. Investigators were keen on questioning her about her communications with Trump allies who attempted to overturn the 2020 election. She answered all of the committee's questions, and as she said from the outset, Ms. Thomas had significant concerns about fraud and irregularities. I just ordered that word. Irregularity. In the 2020 election. And, as she told the committee, her minimal and mainstream activity focused on ensuring the reports of fraud and irregularities were investigated. Thomas's attorney, Mark Paulietta, said in a statement. She also blasted those claiming that she could influence her husband, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, on cases, calling the idea laughable. In an opening statement to the committee obtained by the New York Times, Thomas also insisted that she and her husband, the longest-serving member of America's highest court, abided by the ironclad rule never to discuss cases coming before him. It is laughable for anyone who knows my husband to think I could influence his jurisprudence. The man is independent and stubborn, with a strong character traits of independence and integrity, she said. Trump praised her for having the courage of her convictions after her appearance in front of the panel. He also blasted weak Republicans and rhinos, saying they allowed them to get away with it, referring to the stealing of the election. And I think anybody who listens to this show knows that I think the election was stolen. I would say that there's more than a few people listening to this show who think likewise. So I've never really been... I never really felt weird about talking about that. It wasn't one of those things. I don't want to play politics. VP Harris slammed for saying Hurricane Ian aid will be based on equity. What's this nutball talking about? Vice President Harris came in for a torrent of criticism after telling an audience that Communities of color would be first in line for relief in the devastating aftermath of Hurricane Ian. We have to address this in a way that is about giving resources based on equity. Understanding that we fight for equity, but we also need, we fight for equality, but we also need to fight for equity. She said during a discussion with Priyanka Chopra at the Democratic National Convention Women's Leadership Forum on Friday. I'm encouraged. Harris's remarks immediately came in for backlash, including from Christine Pushtau, a rapid response director for Florida's government, Ron DeSantis. This is false. At the VP's rhetoric, causing an undue panic, and must be clarified. FEMA individual assistance is already available to all Floridians impacted by Hurricane Ian, regardless of race or background. Sanadia Duam, what does it with these names? Are they fucking American names anymore? Christ's sakes! A fellow American at Enterprise Institute added that real people don't talk like this. No, that's kind of true. If a hurricane hits a state, we should expect the government to help all individuals affected, black, brown, white, purple, green, he said. Even Elon Musk, the world's richest man, chimed in saying real resource allocation should be according to the greatest need and not the race or anything else. When is she still playing that fucking race card? 2.5 years in, she's still playing the race card like she's still trying to get elected. You know? She's not even black. She's West Indian. I say it all the time. I don't understand why she's representing her if she feels she can be a mouthpiece for the Afro-American community. At large, 13 million Americans. She's speaking for 13 million Americans, she thinks. Yeah, I don't think so, lady. All right, I got rid of that. Let's see. Is this worth doing? This is pretty big. Yeah, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I want to get that involved. I will. I know. This is out of the Daily Mail. I love it when you get like European perspectives on American cities and situations. Oftentimes they're true, unfortunately. In this case, they happen to be. The birthplace of liberty is a cesspool. Crime wave sweeps lawless Philadelphia with more than 750 people shot dead since Memorial Day. Let me do that again. With more than 750 people shot dead since Memorial Day. Okay. And rampant smash and grabs wrecking businesses. Since Memorial Day, shootings and assaults in the supposed city of brotherly love has been rife with gun violence, being particularly relentless. Shootings have occurred every day of the week at any given hour of the day since May 31, with nearly every corner of the city impacted. The crime wave, meanwhile, has spared no one, with one incident this past week seeing a Temple University grad murdered by a masked gunman. Another on Tuesday claimed the life of a 14-year-old football player when he was heading home from a school scrimmage. Philadelphia residents have decried a recent spate of violent crime that has seen... I got that part. Since Memorial Day, shootings and assaults have been I don't know why they do that. Okay, I got the crime wave, meanwhile, has spared no one. I got the photo of scrimmage. Okay, mass looting and other brazen assaults have been commonplace, such as the one over the weekend that saw 100 children as young as 10 storm and ransack a Wawa convenience store. That video is available online. Just put in Philadelphia Wawa flash mob. In another filmed incident, a commuter was held at gunpoint by a masked marauder while he waited for the subway, further outraging fed-up Philadelphians. The steady storm of violent episodes spurred city officials, including progressive mayor Jimmy Kenney, to stage a meeting last month behind closed doors to discuss ways to reduce violence. However, despite this, the gun violence has been on the rise, causing many to speak out against the city's soft-on-crime policies and politicians, calling for a change in the city that has been touted as the birthplace of American democracy. Yeah. Yeah. It's not just... Oh, here we go. Progressive policies that are being soft-on-crime continue to destroy this city an irate citizen wrote on Tuesday, taking to Twitter. Oh, my stomach is killing me. Hang on. Woo. My gosh. That hurts. Woo. I feel like I just got stabbed. Okay. Oof. Progressive policies being swept on crime only continues to destroy the city. An Irish citizen wrote Tuesday, taking to Twitter to air his distaste with the city's current stateless, less than an hour after the shooting near Roxbury High School, saw five JV players shot, one fatally. Wow. But I'm sure the Dems will continue to complain about it and still vote Democratic, the onlooker added, referring to the city's upcoming midterm elections. I'm sure, of course they will. Sickening to see the kids coming off of football practice get shot dead in Philadelphia, added another of the shooting. Were the still at large suspects left off to barrage at least 69 rounds? 69 rounds they got off. Wow. In addition to the mayor and the city in general, many honed in on the city's controversial attorney general and district attorney, both who have been touted as progressive and have implemented soft policies that have granted repeat offenders multiple chances to escape incarceration. Philadelphia's district attorney is the controversial Larry Krasner, who was reelected in 2021 but has faced dubious impeachment attempts in 2022. Attorney General Josh Shapiro, meanwhile, has been the long accused of being soft on crime, and the state's twice elected attorney general. This is the Philadelphia the demo fascists have created. An internet user chided in shortly after the would-be mass shooting. Where children can't even play without the worry of being shot. It's not a gun problem. This is a soft on crime problem. Absolutely. Very similar. There's a little bit more. The Peeve poster went on to point out that Krasner, 61, is one of the many woke. Is that woke? Woke.
Woke.
He's woke DA. Bankrolled by billionaire Democratic donor George Soros, who put nearly $1.7 million into the Philly's DA, a re-election race since last November. Caused by Soros and bought by DA Larry Krasner and Mark Philly the mayor, the user sniped, also taking a shot at Democrat Kennedy at 64 years old. Another pointed out how A.G. Shapiro done little to address the recent wave of incidences, while simultaneously touting himself as tough on crime in PA. So yeah, this isn't the only city, obviously more one of the larger ones, that were affected by, Soros money went into during DAs and such. I'm in pain. It's not just Philly. It's a lot of those democratically controlled cities. New York isn't doing so great as far as crime goes. I believe crime's up. Well, obviously there's always Detroit, right? Everybody points to Detroit as the poster child of a democratically run city. Consistently democratically run, anyway. And we know what's going on in San Francisco, right? We know California's basically sinking into the sea slowly. Not fast enough. See, we're gonna read that one. Speaking of San Francisco, I want to change gears a little bit. It's out of SF Gate, and this is obscure San Francisco. A fluke, the world's oldest webcam is still watching over San Francisco. Where am I? Okay, the average student at San Francisco State University probably doesn't even know it's there. But on a recent Tuesday morning on the campus, as throngs of them dart off to their next class or settle into the grassy quad to enjoy their lunch, the presence looms over them. A relic of bygone technology, no more than a few inches tall and held up by a couple pieces of blue gaffer tape. I love gaffer's tape, by the way. Almost instinctively, Andrew Roderick stops in his tracks to look up at it. There it is, the associate vice president of university academic technology department says, in the window up there. His colleague, communications director Robin Oldart, excitedly rummages through her pocket to pull out her iPhone, then shows me the screen displaying a website that hasn't changed much since it was launched nearly 30 years ago. The San Francisco Fog Cam, it says in red italicized letters, the world's oldest webcam, live San Francisco views since 1994. Beneath it is a grainy photograph that reminds me of a home video recorded on VHS. A surreal bird's eye view of where we're standing, just to the right of Cesar Chavez Student Center, of course. We're right on it now, Oldart says. I squint my eyes, but sure enough, there we are, a cluster of tiny silhouettes under a light pole in a tree-lined sidewalk. The only thing missing is the camera's namesake, Fog. 20 seconds later, the image disappears forever. A few years ago, Fog Cam itself almost met a similar fate. Though it's revered today as a technological milestone and a pioneer of the World Wide Web, Roddick describes Fog Cam as a student project that started in the university's Instructional Technologies Department in the fall of 1994 and just never left. Hang on. Wow. Ugh. This is ridiculous. Wait. Ouch. Pain. All right. I'm pretty sure I can get through this. Okay. Fall 1994 just never left. Co-creator Jeff Schwartz, known online as WebDog, was a graduate student at the time. And while learning how to script, he discovered the first ever live webcam, which actually predated the internet. Okay, I'm having major issues here. Woo! Alright. When he discovered the first ever live webcam, which actually predated the internet, the Trojan Room Coffee Pot Cam at the University of Cambridge. Its purpose was simple: to provide researchers with computer lab with an easy way to check whether the coffee pot in the next room was full or empty. When web browsers gained the ability to display images, and they connected the camera to the internet in 1993, tech enthusiasts around the world were captivated by the concept, Schwartz included. He worked as a staff member supporting the department, Dan Wong, a.k.a. Dano, to get their own webcam up and running as an experiment of sorts. They used a Connex QuickCam, the first webcam-like device made for widespread distribution. Connected to a Mac, they bought at the campus bookstore, fusing them together with a custom-made software. They called it FileCam because of the misty view it provided of the campus from its first location inside Burke Hall. A year later, Schwartz rigged up a similar setup at his apartment in the Mission District so he could keep an eye on his cats, Petunia and Webb, while he was in class. As far as I knew, they were the first cats live on the internet, he told SFGate 2019. Roderick, who was a graduate student at the same time as Schwartz, remembered how novel people considered the fog cam. Flip phones weren't around yet, and most people were still getting their photographs developed at the drugstore. AOL Instant Messenger was still 3 years away from inception. Information wasn't just a Google search away. It would be another decade until Facebook and MySpace established social media scene. Even reality television was finding its footing around the fog cam time was born. The Real World was in the middle of its airing of its third season, filmed in San Francisco. I remember The Real World. Seeing a rogue project on the campus network was something that virtually never happened. Its technology was likened to the Jetsons at the time, Roderick said with a laugh. Webcams represented the first point in time where you could actually have a camera that was made to distribute images in an intentional way on the internet. It created that first idea that we could connect on a screen and sort of predicted the Zoom thing that came along that we came to rely upon during the pandemic. The slice of view fog cam is primitive by today's standards, producing images with a resolution of no more 320 by 200, said Daniel Johnson, assistant administrator for the Academic Technology Department. Still, it was a rare commodity then, he said. It was like you put this thing on the network and it's generating images. They're so big and they were like a megabyte. Jeez. Vodcam was also one of the first websites to experiment with the early stages of social media, briefly hosting its own live chat room in conjunction with the webcam. Schwartz told SFGate in 2019 that MTV's Adam Curry reached out to ask them how to use a similar model for his own website. The late Kim Foreman, who was the instructional technology department chair at the time Fog Cam was created, said the project was the first of its kind. If Schwartz was commercial enough, he probably could have sold the idea and made a lot of money from it, she told the Golden Gate Express in 2004. Fog was the only thing the webcam captured. Over the years, Wong and Schwartz placed it in front of the Student Health Center overlooking Tapa Drive so that people could see if parking space were available. Occasionally, they pointed it at the Cafe Rousseau line in homage in the Trojan Room coffee pot cam, which shut down for good in 2001. For a while, it was on the ground floor of the Humanities Building, pointing at a bush before it was moved to the library, facing outward towards Holloway Avenue. It was just a little pet project that developed a life of its own, Schwartz said. People liked it, so we kept it going. But in August of 2019, to the surprise of many, they announced they were going to pull the plug. After 25 years, Fog Cam is shutting down, a notice read on its website. The internet has changed dramatically since 1994, but Fog Cam will always have a special place in its history. That year, Schwartz told SFGate that he felt it was the right time to let things go. The bottom line is that we no longer really have a good view or a place to put the camera, he said. The university tolerates us, but they don't really endorse us, so we had to find a secure location on our own. What proved to be surprising was the response from the public following that week. The news was relayed by the New York Times, the BBC, Vice, Smithsonian Magazine, and NPR, among other several outlets, garnering international attention. Twitter called it the end of an era. A hashtag, Save the Fog Cam, was born. Some people even offered donations to keep it running. I did not expect it at all, Roderick said, but I probably wouldn't have noticed them shutting it down if it hadn't been that it got some press play. It started off pretty underground. The history of the cam in the past was that they were surreptitiously putting in places on campus where they didn't think anybody would disturb it or make them turn it off, but it popped up to visibility. People really cared about this thing. By the end of the month, Schwartz came to an agreement with SFSU, allowing them to take over the reins of Fog Cam indefinitely, just in time for its 24th birthday on September 30th, which would have been yesterday. As KQED first reported, it's now under the purview and academic technologies department where Wong still works to this day. Roger credits his colleagues' efforts as the primary source of Camp Survival. I think it's because, I think it's because he was still on campus after Schwartz graduated and was able to babysit the thing and keep it alive, he said. That's really the main reason why we're even talking about it today. 3 years later, it's somewhat amusing to imagine the public outcry when I discovered how humble Fog Camp's appearance is in person. To see the webcam for ourselves, we had to make a trip up to the second floor of the business building and down a narrow hallway until we reached a deserted conference room. Tucked away in the corner and rigged up on a flexible plastic tripod, an upgrade from apparently used red Solo cup. In an ordinary Logitech camera, looking out from a dusty window, a cord runs down the computer, popped up to the carpet, and a note taped to it. And the indication has a historical reference as SF Fog Cam. It reads, "Please do not disturb. Comments or questions." Oh, so they're using a Logicam camera now, which is interesting. So there's an upgrade. These days, Falcon's greatest pearls is a power outage or a risk of getting accidentally unplugged by a janitor. And its upkeep is minimal. Johnson moved the webcam into this location not long before the pandemic, and the departments tend to check it only when it gets knocked over or technological difficulties arise. Coincidentally, after taking over Falcon, the department faced the challenge of helping the entire student body make the shift to remote learning in a single week, handing out thousands of webcams in the process. They also stayed on campus to provide tech support and became inundated with requests. Oh, hang on. Everything at that point relied upon your computer and whatever your home setup was, so Fogcam was a bit of a sideshow for us, Roderick joked. The camera had changed a few times over the year, but it's the software itself that makes Falcon the longest-running device of its kind. Okay, so that makes sense. To update the website, academic technology staff have to manually go in and edit the HTML, kind of like the old MySpace file. And when they have to buy a new camera, they always have to ask with an older model to preserve the old school chunk. They always stick with an older model. Okay, that's cool. The longevity of it is the novelty of it now. Okay. Aldert said, I have value for the pirate radio aspect, but that's not necessarily the endorsement that the student project contained. That's funny. It does have a certain little pirate feel to it. For the most part, Roderick said people didn't even realize it's there. A few have asked if the Fogcam has some backup storage so they can use it to provide proof in event of theft or similar incident on campus, or to simply see a photo of themselves, but Fogcam doesn't save any of its data. Once a photo is posted to the website, it vanishes forever. Wow, that's. Save for a few shots, Older and Johnson have posted on Fogcam's Twitter account in recent years. We're not preserving anything. It kind of feels the way Fogcam should be, Roderick said with a grin. What happens on Fogcam stays on Fogcam. That's pretty cool. Not that anything untoward would ever happen on campus, but that's the kind of spirit of it. There's been a long time debate over whether to upgrade the quality or frequency of Fogcam, but the idea always gets shot down. Oldart describes herself as an anti-surveillance and won't even buy a Ring camera to check on her dog while she's away. To me, it's what's most important about Fogcam, not letting those modern impulses and influences change it, she said. The staff discussed the possibility of setting up a Fogcam 2 someday, a modern cousin with a higher resolution camera and an alternative distant view of campus. But for now, people still find in use Fogcam's easy appeal. Elaine Long, an adjunct professor at SFSU, who also reports on weather and traffic for a division of iHeartMedia, said that when she was a student when Fogcam launched and reported on it for the campus radio station KSFS. I remember a handful of us students going into a dark room with this enormous computer that took forever to turn on and sounded like a wind machine. It was so low and archaic that you think about it now, it was just very exciting at the time. Today, she still checks on FogCam on a regular basis for weather updates at work and tells her students about it, too. It reminds me of when I was a college student. She said, it's precious to me, and I hope it stays around forever. Roger, please, the fact that FogCam is a mirror into the past is what makes it special. I think it was a fluke, he said. We never really thought the sum of total preserving it would not make a difference in anyone's life, but we realized it would mean a lot to lose it. So there's at least a nice story out of San Francisco. You don't get those very often. And I appreciate the tech aspect of it. 94, wow. That's crazy. I wonder, looking at it now, it looks like it's got a modern. This was shot on September 22nd. I'm looking at a picture of it. It looks like a modern camera, a modern webcam. They don't actually have it. I guess nobody thought to take a picture of the camera. There's no actual picture of the original camera, which would have been fun to see. And you know, they make the point where it's the software that's really really what everybody should be so happy about. That's what tied it all together. I love little stories like that, particularly tech, you know. Being Gen X, I was just, you know, I grew up with this stuff around me, and it was just a matter of, do you want to know how stuff works, or do you just want to use it? You know what I mean? And I was always about, how's that work? What do you mean? Show me. You know, I was a show me kind of guy. I needed to see it, you know? Although I never got into coding. My old man did for a while, but I never got into coding. I could make stuff run. I could fix it. I could definitely break it, but I could definitely fix it. And it took me a while to figure that out. I miss putting boxes together. I don't do it as often as I used to because the modern computers are so well built for the most part. The components are so well built, I should say. And when you get a box together, you're going to get a fair amount of time out of it. And, once they hit a certain processor speed, it's just not doing you any more good. You know what I mean? It's that, the difference between, what was it, 48 and 64, I forget how fast the fucking CD-ROMs were going, 32, 64. I got to a point where it was just ridiculously fast. I mean, it's like, okay, I could shave 30 seconds off my life now, if I get this faster drive. And it's just like, oh, not really. Just not in the mood. Anyway, I'm gonna get out of here. I don't feel so good. I will be back next week, short of not feeling well enough to actually be here. But I'm, like I said, I owe a few shows. I wanna get all of October in, so I could get my all of October merit badge. they do hand those things out. Anyway, let me head over to the, where is it? Over here. Okay. And let's see. Yeah, head over to lfmidwood.com. And you'll see them, find the Midwood Files. You'll find my archives. Ooh, really hurts. You'll find my archives. And you'll also find my social media. And you'll find my favorites right on that. I use the favorites oftentimes to compose news. Meaning the news segment itself. Sometimes the whole show is a news segment. Other times it's not. Anyway, so yeah. Well, that's up there. LFMidwood.com. If you head over up top, you look up top, you see 11LR9. That takes you over to John Lightning's website, where you'll find John Lightning archives and such. John Lightning. And what's his name? Dave the Boogeyman and Big Steve Cole and Memoriam. All those archives are available up there. And then if you head all the way over to the right, you'll find a good friend Brad Reed. Thank you for running the show, Brad. We appreciate it. That being said, I'm getting out of here. I will try to make it back here next week. you know, once I get like a week of like, you know, just drinking water and you know, whatnot, I'll start to feel better. So, you know, water is a replacement for soda. I'll start to feel better. So I wouldn't really worry too much. I think this might even be the can of soda that's killing me. I'm not sure. Oof, not good though. Anyway, let me get out of here while I'm still standing. All right, I got that loaded up already. So, yeah. All right, so I'm going to try not hit this too hard. I'll be back next week, folks. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.